Hi, this is Alan Chartok. Joining us today is Will Conklin, director of Greenagers, a youth environmental organization based in the beautiful Berkshire Hills of Western Massachusetts. The mission of the Greenagers is simply stated, youth working to strengthen the environment and our community. The goal of Greenagers programming is to increase youth community engagement and to raise awareness of environmental issues through productive labor in local agricultural and conservation work. You can find Greenagers online at greenagers.org. Welcome, Will Conklin.
Thank you. It's great to be here, Alan.
How long have we known each other, you and I?
I think you've known me since the womb, probably.
I think since you were being held in a blue blanket. Tell us a little bit about your career, what you've done so far.
Well, before embarking on this Greenagers project, I traveled the United States a fair bit and a little bit of Europe doing some backpacking and getting to know our national parks here in the U.S. And then I studied up in Nova Scotia, studying the history of science and technology and philosophy, and finished up at UMass and got a history degree. And I've been involved in education for the last number of years and youth working with Landmark Volunteers. And I've also been...
What's Landmark Volunteers?
Landmark Volunteers no longer exists, but for years it ran wonderful youth programming all across the country for high school aged youth to work in cultural or natural resource or otherwise community beneficent organizations. And they were based in Sheffield, and like I say, they ran crews all over the United States. And so I went to northern Maine to work at a no-kill animal shelter run by, do you ever know Tom and Susanna Lee out of Sheffield? Anyway, they moved up there. And I went out to Colorado to work on a cattle ranch with a group of kids, up to Idaho to work in the Sawtooth National Forest. Just getting out and about and working with kids in these great settings was part of what inspired me to come back home and try to do similar work with kids, but work where the young folks could see the fruits of their labor.
Well, where do you see yourself in terms of the political spectrum? Do you see yourself in the middle? Do you see yourself not thinking Republican, Democrat, but thinking environmental? I mean, I remember your dad, who I love, by the way, Harry, running on the Republican ticket for the assembly for the House in Massachusetts and losing by about 3 votes. So have you inherited that sort of political philosophy?
Well, maybe only insofar as the Republican Party of Lincoln, maybe. But I think my dad's father is a farmer, and I'm currently doing some farming myself. And
what do you mean your dad's father? I didn't get that.
My dad's father.
Oh, your dad's father.
My grandfather was a farmer. And coming from just a rural conservative standpoint in a certain sense, in the sense that we need to take care of the land, and we need to be careful with our money. But, you know, having developed my political sensibility both in Canada and at UMass and in traveling, I certainly come on the more liberal side of things.
Well, how old are you?
34.
So you have family yet? Or?
No, I'm engaged, but no kids yet.
Wow. Who's the lucky woman?
Amelia Wolf.
And how did that come about?
Well, she comes from Sheffield as well, actually. She's a bit younger than I am, and she returned from the Peace Corps in Paraguay about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. And we met socially, and she was had her own little milk cow, Emma, and I started stopping by to see how that whole process was going. We struck a small business bargain to raise some beef calves. And through that, well, I fell in love with her, so.
One thing you have to forget, that's how it happens.
It is.
So you believe truly that young people need to be involved in environmental work. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
Why is that so important?
Well, it's to be connected with the land and what it produces for us and what it produces inherently. To be connected with that is central to creating an ethic of stewardship. And if we are to create an ethic of stewardship to take care of the land and our communities are they're inextricably linked. And I think we're seeing that being fleshed out by some of the broader topics that we discussed, like climate change or population growth or any of these things. You keep coming back to the land and the community and people and building solid people that are aware of their surroundings and aware of their fellow people. And to my mind, before you can develop a real sense of where you stand on an environmental issue, say recycling or something like that, it has to be grounded in how you treat your backyard or how you treat your neighbor's backyard. So in engaging these young people, in some of this productive labor. We use that term very intentionally to be involved in projects where you really see something, a product out of that, whether it be an improved trail or a new garden in somebody's front lawn or removing invasive species where there was once a forest of invasive species. You see the effect of your labor, and then you can see how your hands and mind can affect your community.
Will Conklin, you mentioned productive labor. What does that mean?
Well, in our context, it means going out and using your hands. So in our case with our summer work crews where we give jobs, paid jobs to young people in their own community, they go out and they create a trail, build a stone staircase on the Appalachian Trail. Like I said, build a front lawn vegetable garden for somebody that wants to grow their own vegetables. So productive labor is, in a real sense,
hands-on,
and using our natural resources to good effect. You know, if you think about production and versus manufacturing, the production is often relating to a natural resource, or in economics, if you're looking at production, it has to be tied often to a natural resource. And if we can make those connections about the natural resources and what we can do with them, perhaps we might not use them so frivolously.
I could go in 17 different directions here, but I'm fascinated by what you're saying. First of all, let's back up and talk about Greenagers and how it got started.
Greenagers, as an idea, came out of an organization called the Center for Peace Through Culture, based in Monterey. And they thought that it was important to promote and foster an organization that got our young people out into the environment and advocating for it and working in it. So for the last 5 years, they have been our fiscal sponsor. How much money? It was about $30,000 to $40,000 a year as we grew at the very end of the fiscal sponsor.
And where did they get it?
They got it through donors, private donors mainly.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, and grants. And
So they had the idea, or you had the idea?
They had the idea.
Of Greenagers.
Of Greenagers, yep. And
did they advertise for an executive director, or how did it work?
As I came back into the community, I was shopping the idea around of something like a volunteer youth corps. And I met the director at the time. The organization was about a year old. And we started talking about collaborating, and then she decided that she was spread a little thin and wanted to move in a different direction, so she asked me if I wanted her job. And naively said yes.
Why do you say naively?
Well, I had never run an organization. I didn't know anything about nonprofits. I didn't know anything about writing grants. I didn't know anything about hiring an administrative assistant, which the organization had already secured a grant for. So I jumped in at $12 an hour, I think, and away we went.
Do you think that your college degree actually helped you in any way?
Absolutely.
How so?
Well, particularly the university I went to in Nova Scotia, the University of King's College, is it's a school for rigorous thinking. And you start with going through the history of Western thought. But what it really does, it teaches you to write well and write under pressure. And so when you're trying to raise money for a nonprofit, you've got to write grants, you've got to write them well, and you've got to write them under pressure.
So they actually trained you to do that stuff?
Yeah. Yeah. The first year of that program is you're taking essentially one class for the whole year. It's the equivalent of four college classes. And you write a paper every 10 days or so. And it's not research-based. It's based on your reading, and it's based on an idea. But it's about developing a good argument and a persuasive argument.
So give us an example of what kinds of papers you were writing.
Oh, boy. Well, a lot of them were fairly dense. I mean, it's based in philosophy, so sometimes it might have been on Heidegger's, idea of the nothing. But some more concrete examples would be connecting, say, some of Emerson's ideas to what we now call deep ecology.
What's deep ecology?
Deep ecology is just thinking about ecology in a deeper way. It's thinking about environmental concerns not as externalities in terms of economics. It's creating an ecological ethic, something that is akin to a religious impulse.
As long as you are bringing us into the world of the economists, I wanted to ask you something when you were talking about productive labor. I believe Karl Marx had some things to say about that. and I'm wondering whether or not this organization is...
Are you asking me whether I'm a Marxist?
sort of, yeah.
No, I wouldn't call myself a Marxist, but I mean, where the ideas might overlap is simply in involving as many people as possible in the communities that we produce. Mm-hmm. The more people that are involved in our community resources and our natural resources, the better, especially our young people.
So let's go back to the inception of Greenagers. Now, there's this organization. It's a woman running it. There's some good folks in Monterey supporting it.
Yes.
Along comes Will. And it seems almost ideal for you, considering your preparation both at Nova Scotia, at the University of Massachusetts. You have a college degree, and now they say to you, go to it. Describe how that sort of started for you, whether or not it was like freshman year at a college where you're scared to death, and then the second year you come back, you feel a little bit better about the whole thing. I mean, how did that all work?
Well, it started very simply. Like I said, I was looking to take the organization itself in a slightly in a different direction, really centered on volunteerism and service as a route to this environmental awareness.
How did that differ from what they were doing up to?
A little more activist, and I've been an activist at times in my life, but it's not something that I necessarily gravitate towards. Just for me, it's not how I engage in those same ideas. So in wanting to move in a service-oriented and volunteerism-oriented direction, I started reaching out to schools, going into classrooms, talking to young people, and then working within our community. The community surrounding Great Barrington, Sheffield, the general Southern Berkshires, as you know, is a wonderful community to work in, and was supported by people associated with the Riverwalk and Great Barrington Land Conservancy, Sheffield Land Trust, these land organizations, and then community actors who supported us. So I was able to get a number of young people out volunteering with us, and we grew the programming out of that. There was an idea within the organization already to work on community gardens or gardens for residents. And so in talking with young people, especially some of the young people involved in Project Sprout, there was energy and interest.
And Project Sprout again was?
Project Sprout is the project at Monument Mountain Regional High School where they have a garden adjacent to the school. It's actually on Trustees of Reservations property, but where they have grown food for the last 5 years, I believe, and some of it is used in the cafeteria, some of it's donated to local food pantries. And working with some of those folks and other community members, we developed our Front Lawn Food Program, where we installed 10 vegetable gardens for families every year.
So a family would come to you and say, we want a garden, we don't know how to do it?
Essentially, each year we put out a call for interested families. It's kind of a lottery. We set 4 out of the 10 aside as a partnership with WIC to make sure...
Women and children.
Women and children. Yeah. Women, infants, and children.
Infants, yeah.
Yep. And to make sure that we are serving some underserved population.
Did you ever do one for a rich person?
Yep. And that came out of an intention by the young people. We asked these young people that were involved, we asked them, well, what do you think? Do you want to serve only underserved people? Do you want to serve only people with families? Do you want to serve, you know, what's your idea on this? And they said, we want to give gardens to people that want a garden, mm-hmm. that really want to make this thing work. And so that was the broad idea for us as a youth serving organization and as, you know, an organization that does want to serve.
So they do it all. In other words, they put the potato chunks in and then they keep the thing weeded and they do all of the things which all of us hate to do.
No. What happens is in the beginning of the year, in April, after we've selected the families that want a garden and that are lucky enough to receive one, we load up a van full of kids, a truckload full of wood, and a dump truck full of soil. And we have this kind of garden parade around South County. We build the boxes, fill them with soil, do an initial planting in April for cold weather plants.
And then for those of us who are a little behind here, we're talking about lettuces and things.
Sure, yeah, lettuces, peas, yeah. Kale maybe. And then we'll come back in May and do a warmer weather planting. And then we do check-ins monthly or so.
Well, who's pulling the weeds out?
The families. That's an essential part of gardening.
Yeah. Oh, believe me, I'm all too aware of that.
But what we can do is provide, you know, the technical assistance. I mean, you know, a lot of times the hurdle for a family is one, just getting a garden installed. You know, it's a lot of effort to find the time when you're raising a family to either rip up sod in the backyard, sure. or if you don't have a good plot, you might have to test your soil, you might, all these things. But we come in with these raised bed boxes and what we know is good soil.
So they're always raised bed boxes?
Always raised bed boxes.
Isn't that interesting? Theory being that some people shouldn't be bending over all the time?
Not necessarily. Some of it's convenience for the gardener. A lot of it is convenience for us because it is a lot more labor to pull up sod, and then you don't know what's underneath. And
sure.
then you really, if you're doing it responsibly, you should pull up the sod, do soil tests, and then if you come across some contamination or something, then you're at zero again.
We're talking to Will Conklin. He's the head man at Green Agers, and it's a very exciting project. You know, this is really about you and not about me, but I can't resist telling you that for years I ran programs, internship programs in colleges and in the legislature or a newspaper that I run. And in each case, it was tough to get people who really understood how great this program was going to be until my assistant, who happens to be the producer of this program, David Gustina, and I would walk into a classroom and we would look them in the eye and say, this is what you have to do and here's why you should do it. And then we got applications. We handed them the applications there. So when you were talking before about going around and doing that, going to classes in high school and saying, this is why you should do that, if you just put the word out, it wouldn't have done the same thing for you, would it, Will?
No. And especially in dealing with high school age population, with anybody, we're all getting so many announcements about this or that through the airwaves or the newspaper or whatever it may be. The face-to-face encounter is always more productive.
And somebody in the room is going to say, well, look at you and say, he's cool, you know, and therefore I can identify with him.
There's always that, yep. And you can have a conversation. And, you know, our conversation time is dwindling.
What happens when you get somebody and it turns out that they may not be the most compliant of young people who think it should be done their way, not particularly the way that you may have laid it out?
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever have to fire anybody?
Or
counsel them out?
I have never had to fire anybody or even counsel them out. This past year, we ran 3 work crews plus 4 agricultural apprenticeships, and we have 2 apprenticeships on the Riverwalk. So
wait a second.
30-plus jobs.
What's an apprenticeship in this case?
An apprenticeship is a dedicated position. The apprenticeships...
you put them with somebody.
We put them with somebody, yeah, as opposed to, you know, our trail crews, they're with a crew leader, but
right.
It's 8-to-1, whereas the apprenticeships are 2-to-1, 1-to-1 ratios.
So give us an example of a place that you have apprenticeships set up.
The Riverwalk is certainly our flagship.
Okay, let's go there first.
Okay.
I'll name a name and then you can start and tell the whole story.
Okay.
Rachel Fletcher.
Rachel Fletcher is one of our tireless advocates and a real example of someone who can get things done in the community, as the Riverwalk is an attestation.
Well, a lot of people who are listening don't know what the Riverwalk is, so maybe you
can
tell.
We can start there. Well, the Riverwalk is now, in its 25th or 26th year, a trail alongside the Housatonic River in Great Barrington. It's in terms of length, it's a modest trail at half a mile or so. In terms of the community effort that went into it, it's a monster.
So when you used to walk down there, for those of us who live in Great Barrington, for example, it was a mess.
Yeah.
There was garbage. There were big trees that had fallen down. And now it is this magnificent thing. You walk down and you're next to the river, and with the exception of a few errant mosquitoes that sometimes get in the way, it's a great resource for the town. And all the garbage has to get out of there every year, and
yep.
community members and everybody else. And so that's what Greenagers took over from Rachel Fletcher,
yep.
who sort of found the volunteers herself in the beginning.
Yes.
And then you are clearly one of her favorite people in the world. And she said, Will's taken over.
Well, 25 years ago, they started pulling the trash out from a bulldozed pharmacy. The pharmacy burned and they bulldozed it down the banks of the river. And
is
that's
that
what they
right?
Said.
I didn't know that.
Yep. The old Melvins. Yeah. And,
there was a fire at Melvin's.
Yep.
It was, and what happened is they pushed the stuff right down the hill.
Pushed stuff right down the hill. And Rachel or Heather Cupo will tell you that when they started that project, just each Saturday coming in and hauling out dumpster loads of trash, they knew what aisle they were in. They knew if they were in the lipstick aisle or the cotton swab
That's
aisle.
That's a riot.
Yeah. So, you know, we've sort of inherited more a task of stewardship than of trash cleanup. And that enables us to...
Stewardship meaning you're taking care of.
Taking care of, yeah. Maintenance, you know, making sure the trail stays in good shape, making sure that all the invasive species that they've taken out stay out, and all the native species.
What invasive species?
Invasive species there. We're battling bittersweet vine, Japanese knotweed, garlic
mustard. If you can get
mustard.
The bittersweet vine out of the Berkshires, then good luck to you.
We're steadily working at it.
It's amazing. Yeah.
One of our consistent foes. But the Riverwalk is an amazing exemplar of a property that has virtually eradicated this stuff without chemicals. I mean, you're on the river, so you don't have many options. And it's through volunteer labor and making sure you introduce native species that will eventually outcompete these invasives.
That's fascinating. Yeah. Like what native species that might take over from the bittersweet?
Well, it's always a competition for sunlight. So if we were planting dogwoods, willows, river rye, native trees, anything that over time will develop that canopy to shade out these, and we keep pulling the bittersweet runners.
So you don't want the sun. You want things that will hide the bittersweet from the sun, which will kill it.
Yeah, and if you notice a lot of these invasive species, they're the ones in the early spring. You look out into the forest, the first thing to throw out leaves is your honeysuckle, your Norway maples. They're compromising all of the sunlight for our native species in a lot of cases. Hmm. So if you can keep pulling them and then putting things that will ultimately outcompete, then
let's go back to the kids.
Yeah.
So you have crews that do this work. You also have apprenticeships, as you mentioned it.
Yes.
Do you have an apprentice with the Riverwalk?
Yes, there's two positions on the Riverwalk.
Do they get paid?
They do. Hmm. Yes. Yep. And those two apprenticeships, our farm apprenticeships and our work crews, are all paid jobs. Like I said, about 30 jobs this past summer. And so the apprentices on the Riverwalk are responsible for your weekly maintenance, replenishing the dog poo bags, the brochures, raking the trail, burning some of the grasses that come up in the trail. And then we have every year there's special projects as part of the ongoing maintenance to make sure that erosion doesn't take away pieces of the trail. So we're able to work with these kids and expose them to, plant biology, low impact design.
What does that mean, low impact?
Low impact design, it's a landscape construction technique where you're working within natural systems. So for example, in order to prevent erosion on the banks of the Housatonic, instead of armoring it with big rocks, we each year we put a few 20 foot long, 1 foot diameter coconut fiber logs onto the bank, and the work crews and the apprentices work at this. They pin them into the bank. And then each year, as the river floods, it deposits sediment behind these, and so we get a terracing effect to buttress the trail, and then we're able to plant in that sediment and in those logs to give us roots to hold that sediment there.
Do people swim in that river?
It has been approved for swimming and for catch and release fishing.
Catch and release meaning throw the back.
Yeah. So you don't see people swimming in it too often, but it's highly recreated, canoeing, kayaking, and like I say, I think the fishing tends to be further south into Connecticut.
So now you have the apprenticeships who are paid.
Mm-hmm.
Money has to be raised for those apprentices, right?
Indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed.
And then you have the crews.
Mm-hmm.
And who are these? Are these high school kids?
Yes. High school kids, generally exiting freshmen, young folks that really take to the work and that are good at it, that want to come back into their college years. We welcome them back and encourage them into leadership positions within the crew. But it is mostly high school-aged kids, and there's 8 per crew. We have what we call our community crew that works at community trails and conservation properties and farms, Berkshire Natural Resources Council, Sheffield Land Trust, Great Barrington Land Conservancy are some of our key partners. The Berkshire Co-op.
Wait, so before we even go there, so you mentioned these other organizations. So the crew goes into places they identify, or how does that work?
Yeah, all these conservation organizations are responsible for, any number of properties. And
so Berkshire Natural Resources, for example.
For example, they have an extensive trail system on a lot of their properties. And it needs maintenance, and that's a recurring issue. When you have trails on properties, that they need maintenance, or they need connector trails, or there's any number of issues that may come up in a given year. And we found that it's a great partnership to bring young people onto these properties to do this work. It's a way of building skills for the young people, both manual skills and tool skills, and also just your general job skills of showing up on time and accounting and cashing your first paycheck and these types of skills. And these organizations need to pay for this service somehow, and the partnership to contract with us.
Oh, so they will?
Yes.
And some of them actually save money, I'll bet.
Yep, save money, and we often do collaborative grant writing with these organizations, and so it's mutually beneficial.
So Will Conklin, following along with this, I wanted to ask you, I've lived in the Berkshires. We got there in 1969 part-time, 71 full-time, and I have noticed that there are different kinds of kids in the Berkshires.
Mm-hmm.
There are kids who want to be hedge funds managers, but there are also people who, if they never went to New York City, it would be all right with them.
Mm-hmm.
Literally are Rusty Jones, for want of a better word. They're people who love the natural outdoor parts of things, who are committed to that. Their fathers may have done it. They want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Is this unfair characterization of who signs up?
There's some folks like that that sign up. I'm really proud of the mixed milieu that we attract. And we each year when we're hiring for our positions, we convene a hiring committee of community members.
And, really?
Yep.
So who would be on that committee?
Christine Ward.
Wonderful.
Wonderful woman.
We, of course, have Ward's nursery here all the time for our garden show.
Yep, yeah, exactly. Rachel Fletcher.
Fletcher.
Ben Webster, Webster Landscapes, mm-hmm. often joins us. I think Adam Brown from the Appalachian Trail Conservancy joined us this year. We also have an advisory board, too. So we bring in people from the community that have experience with youth, with business, and an interest in what we do.
How about the school system? Do you get, like the superintendent, Peter Dillon, and other people from the Monument Mountain?
We don't get, administrators on the committee. What we do is once we get our list of applicants, we send that list back to the guidance departments and solicit their input on these individuals. So we have some background from the school standpoint, and we have a great rapport with the guidance departments as well as the administrations of both. We generally work with Southern Berkshire Regional School District and Berkshire Hills Regional School District.
I'm such a cynic, but I wanted to ask you this question.
Yeah.
Why do kids do it? I mean, the most honest answer you can give me, do they do it because, for all reasons, do they do it because, it's going to look great on a college resume? Will that help? Or they do it because, hey, this is what I've always wanted to do?
It's
mixed bag.
Mixed bag. You get kids that want to boost their college resume. You get kids that they simply just want a job. Most teenagers want a job to get some money to promote their own independence.
And, sure.
And then we get kids that we work, like I say, we work with these guidance departments. So there's kids that we sort of target to say, this would be really good for this individual.
Oh, so the guidance council might bring it to a particular student.
Yeah, they would encourage them to apply to our program and then tell us that I think this individual would really thrive or, would really grow from this experience.
Right.
Yeah.
So Greenagers, of course, implies teenagers, to no one's surprise. And does anybody ever, do you get the sense that I don't want to go? I'm not done yet, even when you're not a teenager anymore?
In terms of working on the cruise?
Yes, or in terms of the whole approach.
For the young
people. So in other words, when you're not a teenager anymore and you've graduated from teenagerhood mm-hmm. to the next stage, are there people who are so engrossed in the whole thing, so much a part of it, that this is a wrenching experience to get out of it?
Yeah, I mean,
I know people from the Boy Scouts who feel
that
way.
Yeah, that's where being integrated into the fabric of the community is important, because if an individual has really been thriving with us, but we, obviously we can't offer leadership positions to everybody, through connections with Railroad Street Youth Project, with local businesses, in fact, this is something that we're doing pretty intently right now, is fostering more connections with local businesses where there might be some resonance in the type of work, so that we can shepherd these young people into, full-time, higher-paying type positions.
So some of the people you've got there, Will, who are apprentices, those are natural growth positions if they do a good job to get a full-time job.
Yep. Well, for example, one of our apprentices on the Riverwalk, since he became an apprentice, he's since enrolled in BCC and some environmental science programming.
Berkshire Community College, yeah.
Yep. And he's working for a surveyor now. And he will, in a sense, graduate out of our program. And he has a full-time job that's outdoors that he likes, and he's continuing his education. And this is an individual that was really struggling in the high school environment.
Interesting, because sometimes it's very tough to go from being a student mm-hmm. at a high school or college and then understanding what the word work really means.
And that's, to my mind, one of the reasons that can be difficult is if you don't have the network, the community network. And that's where organizations like ours come in, that we are that network and or that safety net for young people.
Now, speaking of organizations like yours, what about, and you mentioned one, Railroad Street Youth Project.
Mm-hmm.
What do they do in contrast to what you do?
Well, they run some similar programming in terms of apprenticeships. They run a great culinary apprenticeship. They run a esthetician apprenticeship programming.
So esthetician?
What's the hairdresser? You know.
Oh, I see. Gotcha. Okay.
So they do, you know, similar youth work on a general level. They do some really great sex ed programming with the schools. They offer a drop-in center for young people in the town to just as a safe space to come to. They offer counseling. And they're an organization we work with pretty closely.
How so? Give me an example of how you work with them.
For example, a young person who needed to be sort of pushed out of our programming.
Uh-huh.
I worked with their AmeriCorps member whose job it is to find jobs for young people. So I connected this young person with him, and they worked together to find this young person a job. Other examples in the way we collaborate is we share resources like a van. You know, transportation is continually an issue in the Southern Berkshires in terms of getting young people here or there for programming.
You have to pick them up, you have to drop them off.
Yep, you know, that kind of thing. And it's expensive to own a van. And
do you recruit parents at all to help in any of this?
Not in transportation, but in other ways, for events or fundraising. Yep.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned AmeriCorps. That's fascinating to me. What is the state of AmeriCorps in terms of helping both, you mentioned Railroad Street, but also perhaps your organization?
We have an AmeriCorps member working for us as well.
What does that mean?
Well, an AmeriCorps member is usually a college graduate who's interested in doing a year or two of service for an NGO generally.
Yeah, something like Teach for America,
yep.
I believe, had that relationship.
Yep, and the individual that works for us comes through a program called Mass Lift, and it's a program administered by the Mount Graceland Trust that brings in 20 plus AmeriCorps members to work with land conservation and.
What's Mount Grace?
They're a land trust organization in the Hilltowns. I think they're based in Athol.
Athol, Mass.
Yes, and his position title is Service Learning Coordinator. So he comes in, and each member will have their own ideas about what they want to do within the community and within the context of what we do. This particular individual is a shared position between us, Greenagers, and the Appalachian Mountain Club, which has a regional office in South Egremont, Mass. And it's about reaching out to young people, getting them involved in service.
When it comes to getting grants, do you ever make the ask personally?
Yep, sometimes.
How does that work? Does it make you nervous? Makes me nervous.
Makes me nervous, yeah. It's not something I'm developing that skill.
You're developing it.
I'm developing that skill.
If somebody was listening to this show right now, just for the hell of it.
Yeah.
And they said, boy, I really like this guy, Will Conklin, and I like what he's saying, and it makes all kinds of sense. How would they get in touch with you?
They can find the organization at greenagers.org, www.greenagers.org. We're in Great Barrington on 33 Rossiter Street, and our phone number is 413-644-9090.
What did you say that phone number was?
413-644-9090. And I don't do it as well as you, you know, with your fundraising here. But that's and they're free to email either me directly, director@greenagers.org, or info@greenagers.org.
Yeah. Have you ever had a problem? I mean, I run WMC, and I get problems from here and there. At times, people, you know, disappointing, or some outsider decides that they're not happy with what they're either hearing or seeing. Have you ever had to stretch yourself a little bit to deal with that?
Yeah, I mean, I think in any case where you're running a business, whether it's a for-profit or non-profit, and especially I think in the non-profit world where you're constantly stretched a little thin, either for time or resources, and it's almost inevitable that you're gonna at least temporarily disappoint someone, and it may mean putting in some extra hours or eating sour grapes. But that's...
What do you mean putting in extra hours? Maybe you could give us a case study.
A case study. If you've got to just spend the extra time with someone that's
reach out a little bit.
Reach out a little bit. That's if there's a miscommunication or something like that.
Yeah.
You just mean, you don't have to do it, but you're not going to be a great community builder if you don't.
Well, every once in a while, you can do everything you can, but then it turns out somebody is an unhappy person.
That's true, and then it might be best to just to wash one's hands and say thank you for your support, but it's not going to work out.
Yeah. Well, your father and mother, how important were they to you in terms of what you're doing now?
Immeasurable.
How so?
Well, my mother's a great force of enthusiasm and energy, and she, you know, she's, her passion is food and nutrition, and so I think the work that we do with gardens and family, you know, by extension, family nutrition certainly comes out of that. And my father is just a steady community worker.
Well, he may be the most beloved man in Great Barrington and Sheffield. I can tell you that much. People love him.
Yeah, yeah, and for good reason. He's just to greet everyone with a smile and be willing to work with all sectors of society and greet everybody with the same smile.
Well, how do they feel about your having done this well up to now? Are they proud of you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They've told me so.
They've told you so. Okay.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. And that's further encouragement to keep going.
Yeah. You know, I'm fascinated by this business of localism. Mm. You know, our Pete Seeger believes in it. The Shoemakers Society believes in it. But one wonders, with billions of people in this world of ours, and one wonders whether or not when you do a project like yours in which you start really locally, whether you wake up in the morning and say, this can never work unless we take a more global perspective.
The only global perspective that I take is that any other community can do the same thing, but they have to do it in a way that resonates with their community. And
Well, you're lucky because you're in a good community.
It's true. It's true. But we are starting to show the replicability of the program.
How's that? How do you do that?
This year we worked with the school system just over the line in New York State, the Taconic school system, in partnership with the Columbia Land Conservancy.
When you say in partnership, do they kick in some money?
Yeah. Okay. They contacted us. They knew our success with working with young people in southern Berkshire County.
That's great.
And so we recruited young people from their constituency. They cut a beautiful trail in Ankrum. And again, it's just this type of work. Every community has an opportunity to do this kind of work. It's the means of our production are so simple. It's seeds, it's shovels, it's soil, it's hands, and it creates food, and it creates outdoor recreation enjoyment, and it creates an appreciation for one's surroundings. So that's global. But the work has to be with a recognition of what it means to work within one's own community.
Well, now you're a gentleman. There's no two ways about it. People think that of you and the rest of it. Do you ever get angry?
Yeah.
About what?
I tend to get angry if I see something that strikes me as unjust. I don't know if I can think of any particular example, but
if you see an injustice.
Yeah, I don't know. That generally makes my blood boil.
Does it ever boil over?
Does it ever boil over? Rarely, once every 6 or 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
Our local scandal of the moment, the Dollar General thing, is
Dollar General store wants to put up a store in Sheffield, Massachusetts, there's hell to pay among various groups who are opposed to this happening into this bucolic town. And just to bring everybody up to snuff on this, there's a feeling among some of the residents of the town that the proper officials who could have been more aggressive weren't.
Yeah, and then there's arguments to be made in there, and the thing that makes my blood boil is when you have a corporation or another entity that takes the approach of, we know we have more money to throw at this than the other person.
In terms of lawyers.
Yeah, in terms of lawyers, and democracy has its own forces, but it's so hard to counter that.
Yeah, I keep coming back to the fact that your father lost this election all those years ago by about 3 votes.
Six votes.
Six. Had he gone out to one more shopping
center. One more
barbecue.
One more
shopping center, he would have won. And I wonder how conventional politics jibes with the kind of community work you're doing?
Well, I'm not getting into politics anytime soon, so I guess maybe that's your answer.
Well, but obviously there are times you have to understand how the system works.
It's true. It's true. And you know what? I do reach out to and talk with our representatives regularly, Senator Ben Downing and Representative Pignatelli. We are in a circumstance where our politicians really are interested in working with us and helping us. And as you well know, it's often projects that we're passionate about need money, and sometimes politicians can direct money to one program over another, not necessarily ours, but just in talking about it, raise awareness. And you know, in the case of other community matters, say, you know, the Dollar General thing in Sheffield, or with land conservation in general, if our representative can speak to budget items that are going to then trickle down to conservation projects, that's huge.
So why wouldn't you want to be a politician if you can affect change that way? It's not those 6 votes, is it?
No, it's not those 6 votes. It's, I shouldn't say I'm not interested in being a politician. I'm not interested in being a politician on the state side of things. I am a politician. I mean, I talk to people and try to solicit money for projects I'm interested in. I try to win people's affection and favor. You know, sometimes that gets tiresome. And a politician has to do that a lot. And I also look forward to in other phases of my life to build a farm and to continue that side of my life.
So 10 years from now, you want to be what?
10 years from now, I think I could be happy sitting on the board of Greenagers and running my farm and finding the projects in the community where they need me. And letting some younger, more energetic individual do the work that I'm doing now.
So tell us a little bit about working with Grandpa on the farm.
Well, unfortunately, I didn't get to work with him too much on the farm. They sold the dairy cows in 86, so I was 7.
Not on a typical picture in the Berkshires, people selling the cows,
no.
Right.
You know, when my dad was growing up, there were 20-some-odd farms in Sheffield alone. And dairy farms, now there's 2, maybe 3. But the small farms are making a comeback. But, you know...
Why are they making a comeback?
People are... the consumer is recognizing the need to eat nutrient-dense, good local food. And young people in particular, I think, or folks that are making a career change are realizing that there's both opportunity and an ethical resonance with starting farms.
Yes, but their forebears couldn't make a go of it. What makes these young people think they can do it?
Probably youthful optimism, a changing. I think there is a changing paradigm in the food system. People are getting frustrated with factory food, and for good reason. So the more opportunities to find that not just local, but local is a huge step, and then food that's grown in a way that actually sustains you.
So are you always looking for sort of opportunities? For example, in Great Barrington, we've had something for 1,000 years since I've been around called the fairgrounds, mm-hmm. where they used to run the ponies, and it's sort of been overgrown and everything. And now we have some very wonderful people taking over that venue, spending their own money to buy it. It's costing a lot of money.
Yeah.
So when you see something like that happening, you say, now there is something we can deal with, we can work with.
Yeah. Yeah, and I worked with the folks that are organizing that effort, and will continue to do so. And when I talk to some of the young people I work with, either in my class at Mount Everett or otherwise, they get excited about the.
What do you mean your class at Mount Everett?
I teach one environmental science class at Mount Everett High School.
Yeah.
Which is it's great. It lets me be in the presence of young people on a daily basis.
And those are people who certainly can be recruited to be into the program.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. And, they get excited. The Fairgrounds group has done a good job of both soliciting community input on what should happen there at the Fairgrounds and creating an excitement about it. It's so much in the public eye. Everybody knows what it is. Everybody knows that it's been an eyesore for so many years. And the thought of doing something creative with it gets people excited, and even, you know, including young people.
So when you live in a town like Sheffield, there are always sides on anything.
Mm-hmm.
One side is, let's spend money to do something magnificent, and then there's always the other side saying, don't spend any money, we're against it.
Mm-hmm.
Or gradations between,
sure.
between that. Do you have to make the case with programs like yours?
Always. Although I think I'm fortunate to have gravitated towards and be running a program that that sort of, I don't want to say it transcends, that implies a hierarchical something or other, but it's everybody is worried about their kids. Everybody wants their kids to have good opportunity. Everybody wants their kid to have employment skills. Everybody wants their kid to have a good place in the community, unless they really hate the community they live in. And so when I'm reaching out to people to support us, I reach out across the board. I'll speak to anybody about our program, because I really think that it fosters, largely to my mind, a political sensibility. I mean, you can take what you learn in our programming and go whichever way you want with it, but just the idea of getting out and giving of yourself, the service part of things, that does transcend, to my mind.
You use the word political sensibility. It's fascinating. It's what?
I said apolitical, but a political sensibility, to my mind, is well, it does go back to your point about knowing how things work, but you need to have a sensibility of getting involved. The service part is a political sensibility, because you're getting involved. And the great thing is that in partnering with all the organizations that we do, these young people come to a property, and the adults that work in these organizations come out too, and they see their community adults engaged in something, giving of their time, and that's your learned behavior.
So if I'm a parent, I am a parent, but if I'm a parent with a teenager right now, there's a certain gratefulness that a parent will have that they don't have for other things. So in other words, if you, Will Conklin, are doing something good for their kids, their gratitude has to be substantial.
Yeah, and each time I hear that gratitude, it's fuel for a whole nother year. Just yesterday, I was talking with a father of a young woman who was one of our farm apprentices, and he said, he thanked me for creating the opportunity for his daughter to learn some independence, to she was working on a farm that produces pumpkins and sweet corn, and she had to get up at 5 or 5:30 in the morning and go and, you know, to do this. And the farmer, you know, I think most farmers I've met are natural educators, and this farmer took the time to teach her the skills that the father again said to me directly. He said, I don't have the time to teach these skills to my daughter. And I'm really thankful that this farmer did so, and that you created the opportunity for her, and it's gone a long way in giving her the self-confidence to, you know, take that next step beyond high school or take that next step into the job world.
So can you describe the internal feeling that you have when somebody says something like that to you?
Well, it's not unlike that feeling when you're in the presence of, you know, of your, probably of your wife or fiance, I call it the wee-wahs, but I call it the wee-wahs, but it's just a feeling of warmth and of really engaging with someone else. You know, when a father is looking you in the eye and telling you you did something good for his daughter, you know, she might as well be your own daughter. You know, it's like I said, I guess we're doing something good here. We'll keep doing it.
Would you like to have children? And what have you learned from all of this that you might want to inculcate into your kids?
I look forward to working alongside my kids and having my kids work alongside with me. And all of it goes, to my mind, goes towards the amount of time we spend with our young people, the better. And the amount of time our young people spend in contact with their community, both their peers, adults, their parents' age, and their elders, the better for our community.
Now, the Berkshires are becoming a place of second homes, let's mm-hmm. face it. A lot of people were moving up here for the weekends or for the summers. building fairly big homes in some cases, but really are an important part of our community, that's for sure. And you're doing something a little bit different. And so the question is, how do you include the second homers, the summer people, into what you're doing?
Well, one of the reasons that people are coming up into the area is for the natural beauty. That resource is one of the big reasons that they're coming. And so any of those individuals that are interested in that part of it, to see the young people of the community engaged in cultivating that resource for everybody is a huge part of it. Is a huge part of it. And then those are the people that they may start out as second homeowners, but they will likely eventually be there almost full time, either in retirement or otherwise. And we're cultivating that community that people want to be in.
Some of these people are used to sitting on boards of not-for-profit organizations. Got a strategy for getting them for you?
Yeah, I'm actually really excited to that this year is our first year on our own. We're becoming our own 501c3, and we formed a small board already. We will be recruiting new board members, or the board will be, albeit slowly. I serve on one board. I have served on a couple of others, and it's been my experience that slow board growth, careful board growth is a good thing.
You bet it is. We're out of time. We've been talking with Will Conklin, director of Greenagers, a youth environmental organization based in the Berkshire Hills of Western Massachusetts. Will, thanks so much for joining us. I'm very proud of you, and I know we all are. I'm Alan Chartok.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you for having me.
Been listening to Dr. Alan Chartok, President and CEO of WAMC Northeast Public Radio and Professor Emeritus at the University at Albany. For more information on the In Conversation with Alan series, or to order additional copies of this or any interview in the series, call 1-800-323-9262 or visit us on the web at wamc.org.